Hey, I'm excited about this brand interview tonight. We're talking to Juan Pena, the owner of a mezcal brand and a tequila brand. And he's going to talk about both of them, the production style of both of these products, how they came to be, some stories of this amazing label. So stick around and check this one out. I think you're going to love it. Hey man, I'm excited about being here. How about you, Juan? How's your day going today?
My day is amazing. Really cannot complain. And I'm looking forward to having the conversation with you, Brett.
I'm so excited to have you on. Your bottles are so cool. And I so want to learn the story.
Oh, I'd love to tell you everything there is to, everything that we've gone through to create these two brands. And we just continue to keep going and creating more. But yeah.
Well, let's do this for everybody. Tell everybody like who you are and how you got into tequila. Like, what's your tequila journey? When did you first find out that you had this love for agave spirits?
Well, my name is Juan Pena. I am the CEO, co-founder of Spirits Consultants. And Spirits Consultants is actually the owner of Prolijo Mezcal, now Prolijo Tequila, and Tierra Libertad. And it's just such a cool thing that we've created. I'm from Mexico City. I live now in Illinois. My mom and dad both are indigenous of the land in Mexico. My dad is Purépecha. My mom is Otomi. And I just grew up in a household full of agave spirits, you know, from the Coca-Cola bottles, and the plastic bottles. And really, when I grew up, there was no legal age to drink. I guess it was just you can have it and it was there, and every once in a while, either my mom or my dad, in a special moment, like, you know, let's have a little toast. But grew up with that, and, you know, came to the United States, got my education in advertising, and after, you know, a few years, you know, really had something about starting a business, and because we wanted to start a marketing company, and that really didn't come into play. But what we did, my business partner and I, Katie Rachel, we really decided to create a brand. And we wanted to create the brand. And we started with the Mezcal brand, just because we wanted to create a brand. And then we were going to pour our strategy and social media, marketing, communications, you name it. And we came up with Prolijo Mezcal. But really, the love of agave has always been there. Basically, for us, starting with the mezcal, it really made sense at the time, since there were like so many thousands of tequila brands. And so we started with the mezcal brand, and, you know, there were not many, and we just became one more. That was 7-8 years ago. We're going to turn seven years now. We are we're still growing. We're independent. We are very excited. You know, today, many of the brands that started with us, some of them are no longer available, but we're still here. We're still in the fight. But rather than being a fight, it's more of a learning process for us. Every day is a learning, and we get the chance to meet new people, to create new ideas. And really, for me, I guess, like one of the things that fulfill me the most is I always say that as I'm going, you're going to hear that I'm in the business of so many things. But, you know, one of the things that I'm passionate about is about creating relationships with people that are not just business partner relationship or business relationships. It's bigger than that, you know, can be a friendship, can be just knowing something and, you know, really get to know people out there. We started with Prolijo Mezcal, and really that's where everything began. And we wanted to create something special. When my business partner and I started going to Oaxaca, because my dad is the one who knew people in Oaxaca through the indigenous groups down there. He's the one who pointed us down there. So we did. But once we figured out what we really wanted, she and I, we actually came up with a strategy, which was to create, at the time, was to produce mezcal with cultural conscience. So the two of them had to be together side by side. It cannot just be one or the other one. It has actually to be the two of them. What that means that, you know, a large percentage of the mezcal that gets produced in Mexico is mostly from Oaxaca. And Oaxaca, even though it produces a lot of mezcal and other things, food, you name it, spices, it's the second poorest state in Mexico. So for us, for me, you know, coming from the indigenous family, that really didn't resonate really well with me. And so with that in mind, we just started like thinking like, how can we do something a little bit different? We're not going to be, well, first of all, we don't have the capital to change an economy. I don't have the capital to change my own economy, you know, let alone trying to change the economy for a full state in Mexico. But what we decided was, rather than buying the raw materials from big corporations, we really decided to work with local families. Families that have the pulse on in Mexico. And so we started buying the bottles through them, corks, you name it, the lasso, the boxes, everything. And so that helps us to be in touch with our producers, whether it's the mezcal or the raw materials and so on. But at the same time, somebody in between is generating some income. So that's very cool for us. Our printers are in Mexico. The printer for the mezcal is in Oaxaca. For the tequila are in Guadalajara, just basically that. But everything is, you know, hand placed on the bottle of Prolijo. So we started with the espadín. Then we started growing little by little, not full on, because again, we are independent. So the resources for us to like really go on like a big brand just to create a massive amount of bottles, it wasn't there. And so I think that we started learning from the beginning what it really meant to grow as a brand, not only going into different states, but also growing the portfolio. And we were really careful in everything that we did. And so we started growing with some wild agave, see how the market reacted. But we were no longer, you know, by all means, we're not a brand who's following the next brand, see what they're doing. Everything that we do is because we like the product. We believe that that is something that people are going to enjoy, most importantly. But any other than that, for us, mezcal is not so much a smokiness. So the way that we see mezcal, the agave plant is a finished product. We want the consumer to have, first of all, to have an experience with the nose, to really know where the plant grew up, where it comes from, like smell the vegetal from the plant. Also, what are the flavor profiles. So in other instances, we say we want the consumer to have a conversation or the agave to have a conversation with the consumer's palate and really enjoy and find the notes, and each sip is going to be different. And finally, it's going to be a little smoky just because it's roasted inside the ground. So the production for mezcal is different than tequila, even though a tequila is a type of mezcal. But because mezcal, we don't have, you know, like history and a paper that we can say, you know, mezcal started such a year and, you know, so on. Because what we know that it happened in Mexico with the Spaniards and so on. But mezcal started being produced, I believe, thousands of years ago. Mm-hmm. How? We don't know. The University of Mexico City, they found a clay pot in the ground, which is said that little clay pot, you know, goes as far as over 1,000 years. But they found the agave distilled residues on it. Kind of interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And for us, is mezcal has a sort of like romanticism. When you go down to the Palenques in Oaxaca, and I can tell you only about Oaxaca because that's where we bring our product from, the sense of romanticism when, you know, the agave is being roasted, is being fermented, it's quiet, and you hear the, you know, the noise of the burn, the wood being burned, and, you know, the chipping of the wood and distillation. It it allows you to really relax, and it's beautiful. I would invite everybody to go down there and really go down there and visit, and, you know, because it's a beautiful experience, different than tequila. But I'm not saying different because one is better than the other one. They're just different.
Just different, yeah.
And, you know, so rustic, you know, almost one is technology and the other one is not technology. Our batches are way smaller than tequila, 400 liters, 300 liters at the time. The agaves, you know, you have a rainbow of agaves, really. The agaves that grow, you know, they take 6 to 10 years to mature, all the way to 35 years to mature. And each agave is going to provide you with a different profile, nose, and so on. And they're all different. And so that's how we started with Prolijo Mezcal. And then, you know, shit, you don't know, but what I was saying is that Tierra Libertad is a combination between another business partner of mine, Cesar, Katie, and I, and we came together to really partner with Agave Conquista, now 1577. Mm-hmm. It's a unique distillery because this distillery has the kosher certification as well as the USDA organic certification. So that in itself is just mind-blowing because I would have never thought. To me, it's like kosher, like it's just agave. But right. My ignorance didn't know that, right? So in the process with him is very cool. You know, the agave is, and I'll go back into the process for mezcal, but the process for this tequila in particular, Tierra Libertad, is fully mature agave from the Central Valley of Jalisco, 25 and 30 breaks of sugar. It gets roasted in a stone brick oven, which is kind of cool, with a pressurized heat or steam. Then once it's fully roasted, this agave, then it goes through a milling process and basically it squishes the agave like oranges and squeezing the juice out. From there, the juice goes into tanks, stainless steel tanks, and it gets fermented with natural agave yeast created in the house in Agave Conquista. But everything is closed. And it has to be because of the kosher certification. And then from there, it gets fully fermented and it gets distilled twice in stainless and copper alambic. One of the things that goes into this process is that the fibers never go into the fermentation because it will produce just a lot of alcohol. But some of the fibers get placed into the copper alambic just to get that little green, vegetal, nice consistency and aromas from the roasted agave. And I just love that. I love that. It's a 90 proof, 45 ABV tequila, and it's just so smooth, but yet so full of flavors and aromas. It is quite different and interesting. The process, just going back to, you know, not going to digress much and the mezcal, but the process of mezcal, it is different. You know, the agave gets roasted in the ground where there is going to be a fire underneath the agave, but the fire is never going to touch the agaves. And there is a hole really in the middle. And so you cover you place the agaves on top, and then you're going to cover it with dirt. And then you have like some tarps, and it's going to have like a little hole in the middle. And then you're going to pour a couple buckets of cold water to put out the fire, and then you cover it. You cover it also. That's going to be this combustion of heat, which is what's going to roast the agave. And so that really is what gives it a little bit of the smokiness to the agave, but it's very mild, not a whole lot. And then from there, it gets...
How long does it take to cook?
It just depends. It depends on the temperature because, you know, there is really a nonsense set day. You know, it can take a couple of days. It can take 3 days. And it all depends. Sometimes 4 days. And it also depends on the temperature, because all of this process is outdoors. So it's not like an enclosed space, at least with the producers that we work with. So if it is cold, it takes longer. If it is hot, it takes less time, and so on. Same thing for the fermentation, because once it's fully roasted, it gets placed into the taona with the little donkey going around. Then we grab the fibers from the taona, and then we'll toss it in an open pine wood. It's about 1,000 liters. And then we put the fibers almost to the top, and then we fill it up with hot water. Those sugars and the fibers that were being crushed and that were crushed on the fibers, they're going to be nice and tight on the fibers, and with the hot water generates the fermentation process by himself. And then once it's fully fermented, the way to know if it is fermented is like baking bread. You put it in a stick. If it is dry, it's good to go. And if it is a little wet, same way. It's not ready yet, which that it just blows my mind. And it still does every time. And then from there, once it's fully fermented, you're going to get about 5% of alcohol already within that can, that container. And then we'll take everything into a 420 liter copper alambic, and then we distill it twice. The water is well water. You know, the water in Oaxaca is super high in minerals, very high in minerals. It's almost like when you drink that water and then you rub your teeth, and it's almost like it turns like sandpaper your teeth, because it's very high in minerals. So it's completely different way of producing this agave spirit. But, you know, to just go back, I hope I didn't digress too much, but why into this thing, into the agave world? It's beautiful. It's, you know, because it begins in agriculture. That's really where it began, where it all began. Well, because it starts with the seed. And to get those seeds, we need the bats that we all know. Because once the agave, because it gets the quiote twice a year. Twice in their life of the agave. So one is in the middle. The second one is like when it's fully mature, it grows the quiote, it has the flowers on top, the bats, they come and eat the sugars, and because they don't have teeth, they swallow the seeds, and as they're flying around, they do the trappings. You can see, sometimes you're driving and you see in the mountains, agave just coming from the side of the mountain. How did it get in there? Well, it's the bat who did it there, because as the seed is going down through is passing through the bat's body, the body puts a film around that seed, which keeps it moist almost up to 30 days. Hmm. Unbelievable.
Wow.
So the why, I think, is it only made sense for us, mainly because, you know, somebody said to me, it's like, what are you doing, mezcal? You should not do mezcal. You should sell it tequila. And I said, I don't know. I said, like, to me, it's like I just come from that world, you know, like something that is handmade. And to me, that just makes sense. And that's where we started. And so, you know, we started our next project was Tierra Libertad, as I go back. But I think that we didn't start the tequila just because, to my knowledge, I didn't know the tequila and the process that just described for Tierra Libertad was even available, to be quite frank with you. Using the stone-brick ovens, copper alambics. But again, I'm saying just this out of ignorance. And again, just because, to be quite frank, I worked an advertising agency, and I was part of the team who helped launch Tequila Herradura, Tequila El Jimador globally. So everything that I knew, I'm like, it's just not what I think it is. And that's what we started with mezcal. And then we started with the tequila. But I think that what we want to do as a brand is that for us, we want to put all the production process on the bottle. Mm-hmm. So people see who grew the agave, who was it distilling the juice, who created the tequila, what was the process and so on. And I think that that's more important for me than anything else. I mean, the juice is great, but to me, it's like I want people to know who made it.
Sure.
Many times I've seen, you know, other products. I'm like, who made this thing?
Right.
Yeah. But
how did you meet up with NOM 1577? Did you like talk to a lot of distilleries or what was your process there?
So my business partner, Cesar, is the one who had the connection because he used to work for the Mexican government promoting the tequila around the world. So he's the one with that job. He made a lot of connections and he got to meet a lot of people. And a lot of people met him and he just is very knowledgeable of the business. He just started his own distillery in Sinaloa. So this is going to be the second mezcal distillery in Sinaloa. When he told me, I'm like, Sinaloa? He's like, yeah. He's like, we used to make a lot of mezcal here. But it was through Cesar how we got to get meet NOM 1577. And I got to tell you, I love it. You know, people are great. They're super good people. And I just love that. And when I brought the project to Armando, he was like, you know, we can put the label by, you know, through a machine and it goes through here. I said, Armando, I said, would it be possible to place the label by hand? He goes like, but it's going to take more time. And he goes, but if that's what you want, sure. It's like, we're here to like help you. And so the label is placed by hand. You know, they called me the first time and said, like, the labels are a little crooked. I said, I love it.
Yeah.
The more crooked, the better. Like, I don't want them to be perfect. It's not meant to be perfect. You know why it's not meant to be perfect, Brad? Because it is an artisanal product.
Hmm.
Every Sorry. Batch is going to be similar.
Sure.
But as we know, I can make an steak today and I can make another steak tomorrow. It's not going to be the same.
Well, and the fermentation is going to have different temperatures and the agave is grown in different places. And so those changes are always going to be there. Tell me about the label. Tell me, I know there's a lot of meaning here. So I would love for you to explain what the meaning behind it is and then how you came up with the name and this label and your story on this bottle.
So when I was talking to Cesar and we started, you know, talking, and I said, you know, is this tequila? Can I just be a last name? It has to have a deeper meaning in this thing. And Cesar and I, we're alike. Loves the culture, loves everything. His deep in knowledge and history and so on. And he said, look, I said that I had this name that I trademarked a long time ago. And it's called Tierra en Libertad, which is land and liberty. That phrase, it was utilized in the Mexican Revolution of 1910. And the one who utilized that word or that phrase was Emiliano Zapata, a general next to Pancho Villa. But actually, that phrase comes actually from France. That's the line that they utilized under the French Revolution. And they got picked up in Mexico. The reason why the design is of the silhouette of a female is really was to pay respect to all the ladies that fought under the Mexican Revolution. Some people may think the men are the only ones who fought, but these ladies, they were wives, they were mothers. They took care of their kids, their husbands, they cooked. They did whatever they had to do. But in addition to that, when it was time to go to battle, they also grabbed guns and rifles and they went and fought shoulder to shoulder along with men. So to me, it's like, that just blows my mind.
That's awesome. Yeah.
You know, because in my household, not because my dad was weak or anything like that, but my mom, she was always, we're going to do this, taking charge. You know, and consulting my dad, but she was just, we're doing this, we're doing that, this is the dinner, this is that. And to me, it's like, I gotta believe that it has to be with, you know, I can really not generalize, but I'm like, I just remember those moments when I saw my mom taking charge of situations. And when I saw this, my mom has had long hair, same thing with my grandma being indigenous. And they, you know, they would have like the ponytails or, you know, the side ones. And it was just incredible scene to see. It would take them hours to do their hair. But that's what we came up with, the silhouette of the label. And I just wanted an image that will disrupt, you know, the market out there. Simple, yet, you know, captivating, and to open a conversation at the same time.
And an amazing purpose behind it. Like that, that's such a cool story. When I first seen it, the first thing I did was Google, what the heck is this bottle? You know, and what's this about? And that's, I think that's one of the things that's so cool about tequila is the stories that fall behind them, that, you know, there's a family, a tradition, there's a belief, there's something there that's being represented, and to learn about it, that's pretty awesome. It's a very cool bottle. It's a great label. I like how you have like a rustic type paper.
Yes.
You know, everything looks, you know, really cool. And then the story on the back, you know, that explains a lot of what you explained is very cool. Now, how did you land at a higher proof coming in at a, I think this is what, a 90? Yeah, coming in at a 90 proof versus doing a regular 80 proof?
Because of the world of mezcal. Really. This is what I know about agave world. And I'm not going to say that I'm an expert on tequila, but I do have a lot of knowledge when it comes to the agave in general. When you, here's the other thing. We don't use any types of, any for the tequila nor the mezcal. We don't utilize activated charcoal, diffusers. We don't believe in none of that. The best way that I tell people is like, you know, it's like if you make mole and then mole or like a nice salsa and then you dilute it with water to wash out a lot of the flavors just because it's going to be smoother. To me, I don't, you know, because the cooking of my mom and the cooking of my aunts and the cooking of Oaxaca and, you know, like where it's like very rural areas, is raw. It's just so bold on flavors. And, you know, that's the reason why Oaxaca, you know, some of the top chefs around the world, they go to Oaxaca to get spices and learn and flavors and why this and why that. Because all those beautiful flavors that the Mexican cuisine has. So for me, what I know is that when agave has, or any spirit, whether it's tequila, mezcal, you know, raicilla and so on, the more alcohol the bottle has, you're going to use less water. And so it's going to have much more flavors due to the waxes of the agave, the sugars. And that is more special to me because really what I'm putting in, what I'm drinking is the actual agave spirit. And so the more alcohol, the more flavorful it's going to be. And it's also going to be more smoother. That's my view on it. Completely, there is going to be other people that disagree with that. And that's fine. But as you can see, 90 proof, it's smooth. You know, it's like here. My wife is like, don't drink the Prophet.
Yeah, I would be drinking the Prophet, I'm telling you.
I know, you know, but that's to me, that's why the 90 proof. That's why, and it's like everything, right? There is no clear science to something. Everything has a reason to be, and it has a purpose to be as well. If I were going to say all agave spirits, they need to be 40 ABV, I would be lying. Because again, it's about really understanding the agriculture portion of it. Here, I hope I don't deviate much, but for example, the new tequila for Prolijo out of NOM 1626. That agave comes from Nayarit. And it has 35 bricks. So it has so much flavor to it. They were launching it at 43 ABV, lower than 45. But the thing in there is that it just has so much sugar in it, so much, and it has so much flavor that, you know, there are other techniques being utilized in there through the house that really cannot get into detail in there, not because it's, you know, it's more like what they found and what we found and how to do this juice, which is tremendously delicious. I'll send you the bottle. Like we just got more product because it's you know. But anyway, going back to that, that's the reason why the 90 proof.
So was that this brand name as a tequila? Look at that. Okay, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is. You know, we're about, and there are two different processes, right? Mm-hmm. This one is the same process or similar process that it used to be made about 400 years ago.
Okay.
Sombre coven. Mm-hmm. Ona.
Yep.
Open fermentation with wild agave yeast. Distilling a stainless steel, small batch. And, you know, it's just completely from this one. This one came first.
Right.
This one came second. And this is, again, Cesar knew Miguel Rios from now 1726. And, you know, it completely breaks what I just told you about this one.
Right.
The norm. You know, it's like, and so, but that's what we are, you know, finding things. And again, it's also coming from the world of mezcal, which allow us to always keep working at it. Always keep, you know, trying to refine the techniques, rather just, you know, versus just saying this is it. And I think that's the coolest portion of this world, of the agave world. I mean, I love to see, you know, to get into the world of raicilla, which is a completely different animal. That's a different animal. We call that one in Mexico, or they call in Mexico that one the stinky one. Hmm. It smells like blue cheese, like feta cheese.
It's got a real malolactic smell to it, yet a very sweet flavor. The ones that I've had were malolactic in smell, and then this really sweet agave. It had all of those minerals, and it's very vegetal, and it was just... The two that I had blew me away.
Yes. And so malolactic, it's not bad. It's just when people ask me, get asked a lot of questions, and sometimes I said, I honestly don't know. But what I do try to tell, to share is, what was the technique utilized for that spirit? Because for a while, somebody was saying, oh, you know, the mezcal from San Luis Potosí is the best. I'm like, why? Because it's not smoking. Well, they use the same metal, the oven, if you will, that is being utilized for some tequilas. It's a metal. So it doesn't have none of the smokiness, but it's just a different technique. But I can tell you, the once I started like putting in front of individuals, the mezcals, when I was putting them, I had to learn the market right away. I didn't give it to people who drink tequila. I gave it to people who drink scotch, whiskey, bourbons. They're the ones who like, I love it. Different market, different way of going about it. But again, what was your thought on the Tempestate?
I love it. The very first time I drank it and the very first nose, I got the smoke, right? I could smell it. I knew it was there. And I told you when we talked the first time that's the thing that the ones that are super smoky, they wipe me out. So I had the first taste, a little bit of smoke, but I got this sweetness behind it. And I can't put my finger on the taste, but it's almost like a grape flavor, like a dried fruit, grapeish type flavor. So then I was like, what was that? You're like, that was really good. And then from there, I told my wife, we were watching TV and I poured a pretty good sized glass. And as I sipped through it, the smoke disappeared. Like the smoke wasn't there anymore. I didn't even pick it up. I couldn't smell it anymore. And I started getting all of these different flavors that some were fruity, some were floral, some were like really bright. And then in some cases, there was like a thickness to the mouthfeel.
Yeah.
That like changed even some of the flavors again. And I'd go back to that. I don't know what flavor it is, but it's almost like grape. It's like a little bit of a grape flavor. And I got up and, I mean, you can tell, I got up and poured another glass, and I didn't pour it in these little glasses. I had my big Bertha glass that I drank out of. And, you know, my wife's like, I can't believe you're sitting over there just drinking mezcal. And I was like, I can't either, but it is really good. So this is only the second one that I've ever had that I really can tell you I enjoyed all of the flavors that I found in it. And the smoke wasn't overbearing.
That one, let me just tell you a little bit about it, about that Tempestad in particular. So this plant,
holy cow,
takes between 25 to 35 years to mature. It's probably one of the oldest agaves in Mexico. Really cannot say it is the oldest. Now, depending where it grows, it could take less time. It could take more time because none of these agaves, the wild agaves, are farmed. Mother Nature does its thing. Elevation, you know, is it behind the mountain where the wind goes by or is it in front of it? There is a lot of, I probably wouldn't say science to it, but there is, it's like grapes. We call it Mexico mezcal. We call it, it's our wine because similarities, it doesn't grow on a tree, it grows in the ground, but each plant is different. And so this one grows in a very rough situation. Imagine being for so long in the ground where all these plants are doing is crushing the minerals of the ground. And, you know, it just takes very little to grow because the ground is, most of the ground in where agave grows is, some areas are volcanic areas. Some other ones are semi-volcanic areas. So imagine how hard the ground is. It's very hard. So for so long, it was just there in the ground, taking very little amounts of water because there is no irrigation system. If it rains, great. But I can tell you that in Oaxaca, it's pretty hot during the winter. It's pretty hot down there. So the only way that, you know, these plants retain the water is through the morning dew, because these are female plants. So, and you know, during the night, the leaves or the pencas open their pores, and the morning dew is really what, you know, like wets them a little bit, and that's what they collect. That's why it takes so long to grow to this thing. And that's why, because it has those, you know, it grows in a very rough way, you know, the agave really protects himself by producing fine sugars. And those fine sugars is really everything. Alcohol level, flavors, profiles, you know, each sip is going to be different. It is just yummy. And it's that one is a 96 proof.
And it doesn't drink like if you had a scotch that was 96 proof, it would burn all the way down to your stomach. And
yeah,
this, you get a little heat in the mouth, you get a little heat in the back of the mouth, but by the time you swallow it, that heat is gone. Like the fire's in the front, and it's really smooth and, you know, really easy to drink in the back. And yeah, I couldn't tell that it was, you know, any higher proof than, you know, any regular tequila that I would drink.
Right.
Now, here's a question. You know, these are blancos, and I know that it's not super common to have aged spirits in mezcals. I know that the usually the ones that are is because a family was storing the mezcal in a barrel to have with the family, right? So are you doing any repos or añejos with your mezcals?
With the mezcal, we have one repo, and it's a high-proof mezcal. It comes in a 92.
Okay.
So 46 ABV. We only bought 5 barrels, brand new, charred for 15 minutes, level 2. We set the mezcal in there at 48 ABV came out as a 46 and change. It's really not exact, but we just run out the numbers in there. And, but that's the repo that we have. Now, for Tierra y Libertad, it's a right now, just because the name is Land and Liberty, the plan is to not make repos or añejos. The plan is just to almost play like mezcal, different levels and techniques of blancos. As I had mentioned to you before, there is a new small batch that is coming for Tierra Libertad, 55 ABV.
Those are my favorite.
110 proof, and it's already leaving Mexico in 2 weeks. You know, a small batch is going to have the number of the bottle. We're super excited. The color is going to be similar color of the, or similar design. different information. It's going to be the label a little bit pinkish, but, you know, so that's, and then different technique, you know, adding somewhere, I can tell you this, raw agave, maybe some semi-cooked agave, you know, here and there. Because that's how people play years ago. They didn't know what they were doing. They were just practicing. And we are doing just that. We're going to play with this because it's playful. This is not, you know, like, and so part of the, and the other thing is that we're going to start playing is, so the small batch is coming from NOM 1626, Tequileria Rios. So we're going to start doing that between Agave Conquista and Tequileria Rios. We're going to start just playing, see what we came out of it. But yeah, we, you know, science to say is, it has to be this. I'm ignorant to that. And I think that sometimes plays well on our end because we just do things a little bit different. And I do call it ignorance, you know, because if I get to read and say it has to be this way, then, you know, we wouldn't. Yeah. But anyway, so.
The first time you sit down with some of these master distillers and you really have them start to explain and talk about the process. I have several that I've become friends with, and the conversations, there's a part where they get so passionate about the process and how many different ways there are to make different profiles of a tequila by even like with an autoclave, changing the time that you cook it in a low pressure autoclave and the amount of pressure that you use and how you can make that agave sweeter. And then that tequila tastes different. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute, huh? Like, how did you come up with these different processes? And how do you make four tequilas at the same distillery and all four of them taste, the, you know, different yet good? And to me, it's so interesting. The science behind it is so exciting. And I did have a really great master distiller tell me that a master distiller never makes a mistake. They only make a new profile. Now, it may not be a good profile, but it's a profile.
I will concur on that one. Definitely, this is what, that is true. That is completely 100%. Good things in life, not all of them, but have been a mistake.
Right.
Pita chips.
They had potato chips?
Right, like the pita chips. Do you know the story about the pita chips, right? Like,
no.
So I'm not going to paraphrase it, but I guess like some ladies who had like, were doing the nuns, they, you know, and then I guess they had like a big order and the order didn't get executed. So they left it overnight. And they got a little hotter. And so they roasted it in an oven, and they just, that's how pita chips came out.
No kidding.
Now, don't paraphrase me on that one. I probably shouldn't be saying that unless I really knew that that's what it was. But it was a mistake, you know, an honest mistake. You know, something happened. And I think that those are how, you know, because 10 years ago, we were educated in a way that this is how tequila is made. That's produced, big brands, you know, that's only how it goes. And I think that today there is a lot of more people who are playing with just trying new things, mainly because thanks to you, thanks to all the agave clubs, I think you guys are the engine of this change. Because, you know, somebody's like, I tried this brand and it was like this, and somebody said, but that's the technique, that's what it's supposed to be. And, you know, all these you know, beautiful humans like you out there talking about, you know, being open to this, being open to that, grabbing bottles that I hear sometimes I never even seen. And then you try, like, this is worth trying. Try it. Just try it. And I think that makes a big difference. That truly makes a big difference. Because otherwise, I can tell you that I've done samplings when I just had the mezcal. And, you know, the people who went to buy tequila, they were just picking up what was commercial, what they knew. And I'm like, well, we'll never be able to beat these guys. But now everything is changing. Everything is changing. And I think that is just, it is great to see, because everybody, you know, when you talk to the different individuals in Mexico and some here in the United States, we all have stories about what our parents, grandparents used to drink, used to talk about mezcal, tequila, all of these, you know, spirits. And now it's like, well, let's try something different. And we don't have, this is what I love too about data, right? Because coming from advertising, I remember that people will just say, well, people buy tequila just because data says they want to shoot it and make margaritas with it. You can still do that, but there are so many brands out there today that, you know, they're worth trying. And I always tell people, whether it's a mezcal or tequila, try my brand, don't try my brand. Keep trying. Keep trying different spirits. Keep trying until, you know, there is a saying in Mexico for mezcal. They said that we don't find mezcal. The mezcal finds us and then unites us.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and it's just such a beautiful thing to see. But, you know, the future for the spirits, I think, is especially the Mexican spirits. One, that it is vast. It is vast. I mean, when you look around and you look, for example, in France, how many spirits do they really have? Not many. Mexico, you have mezcal from the different states, and each state offers you something different. You have raicilla, sotol, charanda, bacanora, poch, rums. Now they're making whiskeys down there. But just talking about the truly ethnic spirits of Mexico, there are a lot. There are several, and, you know, but
that's where I am too. I love the tradition. And that's why I like doing this, because there's one thing to see a bottle on the shelf. There's another thing to see a bottle on the shelf and know the story behind it. I love sharing the traditions of this. I so appreciate you doing this and taking the time and giving me some bottles to try out. I have a question I love to ask brand owners, because this is heart and soul. This is you as an artist making your thing, right? So if you could sit down and take one of your bottles with you and drink and talk about your brand with anybody, who would you pick to do that? And what would you bring? Would you bring the mezcal? Would you bring the tequila? Would you bring both? And who's the person, alive, dead, famous, whatever, who would you like to sit down and share this product
with? Oh boy. That's a tough one. You know, you know, spirits were made to like share and to generate that conversation. If I could, and it's not alive anymore, but I can also tell you who to, I would probably have Johnny Cash.
Wow. That'd be so cool.
I will bring the two of them and sit down with Johnny Cash and just, what inspired you? Like, what you know, what makes you tick? I want to hear everything about you, because these things are art, you know. Yet not created the juice by me, but the brands and who we work with and how we put everything around there. And definitely, you know, I'm never going to say that I am the guy producing this thing. I mean, I'm by far not that guy. I'm not a mezcalero, I'm not a tequilero. I drink the tequila, you know, I'm a marketer, and but you know, always with the idea of the culture. The other person that I will do it with will be probably my dad, who passed away last year. He left us when I was probably about 8 years old. Never seen him again. And, you know, he passed, and I wish he would have known that what we're doing. But yeah, that's that. I think, you know, Brett, in Mexico, death, we make fun of death, you know.
This is true.
You know, we're not too serious about it, you know, but definitely that will be the two individuals. But today, I gotta tell you, I'm excited. If I can, I hope you're able to come to Chicago in May.
So I live in Indianapolis, Indiana, and you may not know this. There's a little thing that happens in Indianapolis on Memorial Day weekend.
The 500.
It's It's a little event called the Indianapolis 500, the greatest spectacle in racing. And our family's kind of ingrained in always getting together for race day and race weekend. But I'm actually potentially going to step out and head up to Chicago on the Saturday and come hang out a little bit and then come back to Indianapolis. So I'm working that out. But Lou's been working on me to get up there. So I'll probably be there.
I like to work in those events because, you know, all the people that I get to see and say hi again, and, you know, those are beautiful things. You know, who will be your two people that you will bring your favorite bottle of tequila that you will take it to?
Probably one of the coolest ones for me, and this sounds corny, is Sammy Hagar. And that is because Sammy Hagar and the oldest blue bottle and the old ceramic Cabo Wabo bottle, that's the old school tequila that I fell in love with. So probably Sammy would be the one that would be the coolest to go, "Hey, Sammy, I found a tequila for you to try," you know, and I think that'd be really cool. So, I mean, it's kind of corny, but it'd be pretty cool.
It's your story.
Yeah.
It's what you want to do. You know, probably Johnny Cash could be like a default and we're like, of course. But, you know, it's to me, it's like he's the last song I don't know if he recorded that song or, you know, the one that he dedicated to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the last one. I don't know if it's the last one or not, but I got to tell you, give it a try. Listen to it three times in a row. And it really gets you to like how he felt. Like when I listened to it, I had like a little bit of a headache and I feel like down and I'm like, whoa, wake up. It just saw how deep the guy, you know, the passion for his music and, you know, and I'm like, man, like his music really gets to me and I love it. And I did not grow up with him. I came to found him here in the States. Just that music to me, like that passion, and you know, maybe because I'm a creative person, if you will, like, you know, kind of like passionate when it comes to the creative process and so on. And I think that's just something that I'm like, man, I understand this guy.
Well, passion recognizes passion, right? We're attracted to things that we usually have something deeply ingrained in ourselves, and to see the passion of somebody else and recognize that you have a passion too, that brings you together. And speaking of that, thank you for having passion in this industry and bringing these kind of brands to the market. And I can't wait to share them with as many people as I can. Where can people find these bottles to buy them? Do we go to a website? Where's your spots to go find these brands if they don't live in a state that you have them?
So you can buy it online right now, either on the Tierra de Bottle has the URL. It is drinktyl.com. And that is the website. And you can buy it online out of Roadrunners in California. I love Matt. Super awesome dude. And he also does the fulfillment for Prolijo and ProlijoMezcal.com. But here in Illinois, you can buy them at the Morenos Liquors, La Vinata Liquors. You can find them here in Illinois, just about everywhere. Beanies, you can find them as well. Though we like to work with independent liquor stores, really, just because they are as passionate about our products and they get very excited about our products, and that really like helps us as a small brand, because they're going to be like, try this. So that's that one. In other states, you know, we're in Indiana, but our distributor is not that big. So, you know, you can find us in quite a few spots. I know that where you can find them is going to be like on the northeast portion of Indiana, bordering against Illinois. But California, Massachusetts, Kentucky, Georgia, Colorado, San Luis, Missouri, Texas. We are in about 16 states, and we are about to open 6 more markets. So it's we just continue to grow. And you know what is the thing, Brad, is that when the distributors, when we have a conversation, they're very excited. And the first thing is like, how come I haven't come across your brand? And I would say like, because we're a small brand. We're growing, we're doing the right things, but you know, and that's pretty much that. I love to see that excitement as well. But you know, little by little, we are becoming a player that people get to know us more, and they see the quality. And you know, at the end of the day, really, the quality is what sells a product.
100%. And I can't wait to share it with. I didn't realize that you had an Indiana distributor, so. There will be a couple of liquor store buddies here at my bar here really quickly. We'll have them try it out and then get it in the stores down here, because that'd be great, because then I can just head over to the store and pick it up. We'll put those websites on the screen here so people can see them and click on them. And I'll also tag your social media on here so people can follow you on all your social media, because you've got some great social media out there. And I want to say thanks. Thanks for taking your time tonight. I know that you're not just sitting at home waiting to talk to some goofy guy on the internet. So I appreciate you taking your time to do this and sharing this. And I really enjoy both the tequila and the mezcal. I can't wait to try others. And thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Well, Brett, thank you so much for your passion, for bringing us to share our story. This is one of my favorite parts of the gig, as I was telling you, to tell our story, to tell some things that sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, that happened too. Cause you know, it's been so much stuff going on, but no, thank you for having us. And you know, let's keep sipping.
I'll be refilling here in a second. So I appreciate you very much. Thanks, Juan. Have an absolutely fantastic night.
You too, Brad. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.